Okay, good evening and welcome to the Wednesday, January 16th, 2019 meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. We have two members absent this evening, John Irwin and Chris Parker. We do have a quorum with the rest of the members here. There's no announcements or presentations this evening. The election of the chair and vice chair we'll do at this time. Are there any nominations for selection of a chair for this next year?
I recommend Rick Dreschler to maintain the position of chair.
Any other recommendations? Nominations? Okay, all in favor of Rick Dreschler being chair, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Now the position of vice chair.
I recommend that Jan Goldman fill in as or become vice chair of this body.
Any other nominations for vice chair? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Jan will be the vice chair. Public comment period. If there's any members of the audience that would like to address the board at this time, please approach the podium.
Anyone?
Seeing no one, we'll close public comment. The consent calendar is the A1, approval of the minutes of October 17th, 2018. Is there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Is there a motion to approve?
I recommend that we approve the minutes of October 17th.
I second it.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carries. We're going to change the order of business. It's been requested that B2 be discussed first. That's the discussion of the city goals. And we'll do the director's report after that. So at this time, I'll turn it over to our city manager, Scott.
Thank you, Chairman, and members of PWAB and community members. I'm here to talk about the 2019 City Council goals and objectives process. I'm going to run through a little bit of where we've been and really trying to get input from this body about what we might want to pursue in terms of goals related to the charge of this board, mainly public works items. So just going to run through it real quickly and can answer any questions that you might have about our goals process in the past, kind of what we're thinking about in the future, and really trying to get your input moving forward. So the existing city council goals, we have five of them. By way of a little bit of background, the city really launched into this about 2 or 3 years ago and had an overly ambitious, I would say, goals approach. 10 goals with about 87 objectives. And while it's always good to shoot, aim high and try to really stretch the organization, I think that was a bit much for a city of 100 employees and while we're grappling with some major issues like the wastewater project. So those were narrowed down over the last year or so to the five goals that are before you. They're not in particular order, but certainly we've been focused a lot on economic vitality in the community as well as fiscal sustainability, as we have the pension liability issue that's out there and really kind of landing probably this fiscal year and getting worse as we move into the next several years. So really trying to create stability for our organization and broaden the economic vitality as much as we can in terms of making tourism dollars work as best as possible for us, but also looking at other opportunities to expand outside of that arena. The wharf project, as members of this board are aware of, you know, you're part of the trifecta of advisory bodies that looked at the wharf project before the rates were released to the public. So you're well aware of that project, as well as the One Water Plan that looks to integrate stormwater, wastewater, and our water system all into one. We've made a lot of progress there. One of the goals that's really kind of stood the test of time is improving our infrastructure and public spaces. This is probably one of the goal areas that's most has the most nexus with your board. We've done some work to solidify our consolidated maintenance team and really try to focus on keeping our public serving areas clean, to keep our parks in good order and do the best we can with our facilities, but we are limited in what we can do to invest in buildings like this one. And we are struggling with our audio video components, as you've probably witnessed in your time here on the board. We want to make investments in this building, in our community center, in City Hall, our police stations. Those things all require a lot of strategy and thought about investment. We have undertaken, are still in the process of going through all the updating of our major planning and zoning documents. Made a lot of progress to date, but we still have some ways to go with the Coastal Commission, and that's been a major goal area. And then one that was added last year is really trying to improve how we communicate and engage with the public. That's a goal of a lot of communities, especially this one, and it extends beyond just the obvious issues like the wastewater project. And then these goals typically have a set of objectives that are a little more kind of in the weeds, and then even further down into what we would call our work plan that actually sets out the initiatives we're going to try to accomplish and how they relate back to the City Council. We identified 30 action items last year and have made a lot of progress towards many of those. We try to provide regular updates to Council on a quarterly basis. And one of the key things that Council kind of identified last year was that we want to do more engagement on the front end so that we hear from more community members as we establish the goals for City Council. I believe last year we had 8 folks turn out for the City Council retreat. And I think we can do better than that. And we're trying to find ways not only to get people to come to meetings, but engage them where they are. Not everyone has the time or the interest in attending a meeting, but if we can find ways to make it easy for them to engage online, we're going to pursue those avenues. So we definitely want to increase our efforts to engage community in this process. This is where it gets a little hard to read, and that's why I printed out the things that you actually can't read either. Sorry about that. But these are the action items, the 30 identified, and this first list are those that we've completed. You can see a lot of them are related to the wharf project, but we also have, balanced budget being an objective, which we achieved this year, getting a marijuana tax approved on the ballot, which we did. And City Council will take up the next step in that in terms of what we would actually assess marijuana businesses or cannabis businesses. We have an MOU with the Chamber to help, in essence, implement our economic development strategic plan, and that's been launched. A whole host of wharf-related items. We've created an adopt, or really extended our Adopt the Thing program, which is now called Adopt Morro Bay, and that's working with our volunteer groups to do beautification. We have an amazing array of volunteers in our community, and they all want to help the city, and that's fantastic. So we're created a formal program to kind of recognize what they do and take it to the next level. Oops, did I do that wrong? Okay, next. And the next set are a mixture of action items that we've either completed or made significant progress. There's the offshore wind farm opportunity. City Council engaged the city in a community benefits agreement with Castle Wind, who's one of the major players that's trying to move through the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management process to procure a wind energy site offshore that would connect in with our decommissioned power plant, which would provide economic generation for our community and direct revenues to the city. So it's a major opportunity for the community. It's probably on a 5 to 10 year window, but we are making steady progress going through that process. We're looking at tourism always, see what we can do better. We are now partners with the Monterey Bay Community Power, which is the Community Choice Energy Program, which when we launch about a year from now, we'll be able to provide the same price that PG&E currently charges for electricity, but at a much higher green and clean energy rate than we currently are able to get from PG&E. Some of the more other wharf items, including the EIR and submitting applications for low-interest loans to make this project as affordable as we can. The One Water Plan is in there, and then a host of issues around the general plan. We really want to take our website to the next level. We're implementing the marijuana ordinance and trying to create a better reporting structure to the council on our goals. And then last, we have a whole set of other issues that some are making some progress and some are really just in their infancy. We're creating a lot of new financial policies to ensure that we can get through the next recession and other financial emergencies. We are also probably be looking at parking as one option for other revenues or sales tax or TOT. There's just a whole host of things that are kind of up in the air at this point that City Council may consider looking into. There's the Morro Bay Aquarium site. Currently, the Central Coast Aquarium is very interested in occupying the existing site and maybe doing a complete rebuild of that facility. And they have engaged a consultant to do a feasibility study, and we should be hearing back from them either this month or next month about the results from that feasibility study to determine if it is a viable opportunity moving forward. We are also looking at our lease management policy, how the city engages with our waterfront leases, homeless issues, of course, and more wharf items. And so you can see it's kind of a smorgasbord all over the place, but we have made a lot of progress. A lot of that has to do with the great staff we have behind us, and City Council really focusing on some key target areas that will have lasting benefit for the community. So as far as this year's process, this is one of the avenues we're trying to engage the community. We'll be doing an online survey, probably kick off early February. We'll be hosting a community forum probably in late February or early March with City Council and the community and other avenues to really get folks to provide their input. Following that community forum, the City Council will take it up and go through their own process to select and adopt goals and objectives in a work plan for the next two-year cycle in March. And then on the wings of that will be the budget development, because the strategic plan and the financial plan are absolutely linked, and it makes sense to start with your goals first before allocating your dollars. So as far as a recommendation from PWAB, just wanted to provide you this update and then seek the priorities, if you will, from this board about goals and objectives or even initiatives that you desire the city to take on as they relate to public works. So happy to answer any questions you have. I know that's a lot to digest at one time, but thank you.
Let's see. Does anybody have any questions at this time for Scott to start things off?
I have one quick question. When are you looking for some of these goals that we wish to add? I assume it's not tonight, because I just read this 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, sure. You can discuss tonight, and then we can also, you meet on a monthly basis, I assume.
Oh.
Yeah, so we could come back, or you could submit them in writing. It's entirely up to the board.
Oh, okay.
But we are flexible. We won't be bringing the kind of final compilation of input to council until the end of February. So that does provide you time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Rob, we have, the department has a list of work that they are focused on as far as priorities, right?
Yes, we work from the council direction. So work on what they have us do first, and then they're is basically our day-to-day work plan also. So, you know, one of the major goals up there is improve public infrastructure.
And that could be just about anything.
That is anything and everything.
Yes.
It's where do we start? And we've been picking away slowly at our street issues using the funds that we have available as economically as possible to get the most pavement restoration down as possible. But we need to look at buildings like this, improvements to the community center, a whole host of variety of other options. We also work for a list of major maintenance projects, re-roofs that we need to do on public buildings. We have a list of about $5 million in sidewalk improvements that need to be done in areas that have sidewalks. And we receive about $60,000 a year in CDBG funds that we typically use for that sidewalk work. We do have a long list and a limited funding stream to help us satisfy those needs. One thing that we did with the One Water Plan, which Council did adopt this year, is prioritize and schedule our utilities capital projects. So our water and sewer projects are now on a schedule that work will feed into the budget, and we have a very good work plan on the utility side. On the general fund side, it's less defined because we haven't really had the funding to put into that planning effort, except for in the streets area.
Okay, Jan?
So you just listed a lot of things that need to be done, like the re-roofing and the updating on the building. So do you want from us to help you prioritize it? I mean, I wouldn't know which buildings need roofs first.
I was going to say is maybe in this discussion here, look at the bigger picture rather than saying re-roof this building and not City Hall. Come up with public works-related issues that you feel as a board need to be accomplished. Like, is it your board's, I'm just going to throw something out here that I have no idea whether it's important to this board or not, to complete the grid of sidewalk in the commercial areas in arterial and collector streets? Is that important to you? Reconstruct the Surf Street stairs with a ramp system. Is that a high level of importance? I wouldn't go down to prioritizing which buildings should be re-roofed because they all need to be re-roofed. That's really not an option to not do that work. We need to keep the envelope of the building sealed. Hope that helps. Scott's going to add something.
All right. Yeah, the goal is kind of the 30,000 foot level, and the objectives at about the 10,000, and then the work plan is kind of okay. How do we translate that into what we do on a daily basis? So I think where the board wants to be is somewhere in between the 30 and the 10,000. That's where council's going to get the most value from what you can provide. So if you think that the city should focus its limited resources beyond what it can do on the day-to-day basis to evaluate all of its assets. You know, that could certainly be a goal, or create a funding mechanism to begin to address its, $50 to $100 million backlog in capital. That's kind of the high level that we would be looking for to provide counsel from a policy side. And then it's up to staff to translate that into how we do it and what to focus on. And we can bring that to council through the budget process.
I got a question then, Scott. It came up as a result of your earlier discussion up there. You talked about that wind farm, and you talked about the marijuana ordinance. Are all those monies earmarked for the general fund as a result right now, or do they have to be dedicated to certain things?
The marijuana tax is a 50%, so it can be used on anything.
Oh.
The wind farm, we have a collective – or not collective, a community benefit agreement, and there was a $250,000 payment to the city from from Castlewind to engage in that exclusive agreement.
But that'd go to general
that
funding.
That at this point hasn't been allocated.
Okay.
So there could be an argument made that some of that should be harbor related because of conduit that it would come through.
What I was trying to figure out. No, if it was a utility issue or if it was a general fund.
Right. At this point, it's that one's a little up in the air.
Thank you.
Yeah. Scott, of course, you said you've got a list of issues and so on that you'd like to look at, like us to look at. If we could have a copy of that, and then we can enhance whatever we want, add whatever we want to it, and get it back to you by next month or next week or whatever you deem acceptable.
Right. And I don't want to put words in the mouths of the board or the council, but that's just, we know we have a significant backlog of just capital projects, right? And it's so that ultimately a goal could just be to address that, you know, and to make that a priority, because we do have to maintain our general fund ongoing day-to-day operations. That's certainly one goal. The next one could be an investment plan or a revenue strategy to start to begin to address those deficiencies on the capital side. Or it could be a completely different goal to make our facilities clean, or it's kind of up in the air at this point, but I can always give my recommendations, but we really want to hear from you, since you're sort of the experts outside of staff and from the community side, and what you experience on a daily basis, what you see out in the community that you see as problematic or needs addressing.
So what's our time element on this?
If you wanted to have a kind of a formal recommendation from the board, I would suggest the next board meeting would be the time to have it all wrapped up.
Okay, so if we could get that in an email to us, and then we can hatch it over, and then discuss it our next board meeting. Fine.
Let's see. I like that idea of getting that information so that we have. I realize you don't want to be putting words in our mouth, but it does give us a lot of areas to look at. Also, it might have been good if we'd had the director's report first, because we go over a lot of this
we
stuff.
We can talk about
and
that.
And it would have been
no,
stimulating,
right?
A lot of those things come up, above and beyond what's printed there in the director's report. And before I forget, I just, for my own information, on the that agreement with on the wind farm thing, that $250,000, is that for a set number of years, a 1-year period, a 10-year period? Are we locked out? Taking other deals if they it doesn't get canceled if somebody else gets the leases?
Yeah, we have a favorable agreement. The $250,000 is a one-time lump sum, and that's already in the city's coffers, and it's being held out until we can bring it back to council to determine how to use those funds. If Castle Wind is unsuccessful in the auction for the wind energy area offshore Cambria, but which would connect to our decommissioned power plant, the city would get 50% of the proceeds of that sale. And whoever successfully gets that auction, wins that auction, is going to have to come through our power plant. So we will receive, we'll have some new agreement with whoever that is at that point in time, which will lead to direct revenues coming into the city, just like we had with PG&E and Duke Energy before when the power plant was.
So it's an open-ended for them as far as number of years it could take before a decision is made anywhere, and that 250 is just good for the entire length of that?
Yes, that's right. But it's we expect that after the auction is complete, which would be probably 2 years from now, that we'd be looking at maybe a new agreement at that time. But it's hard to speculate. I mean, the federal government's not even open right now. So 2 years might, we don't know how that's going to turn out. But we're optimistic.
Yeah. All right, back to this thing on the goals. Are there any other desires or, from any other board members as far as what we need? Or do you have any ideas that you want to throw out right now? I know personally, when you were talking about things like the sidewalks, I don't have any issues with infill of the business commercial districts, but I know out in my neck of the woods, we don't like sidewalks. So the fewer the sidewalks, the better. People love walking down the middle of the street. We're human speed bumps, but it keeps the traffic down.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that's just from my own personal point of view. Okay, no other... okay, Jan.
No, this is going to be brought up later.
Okay. Okay. So are we through with the Scott? Can we let him escape for all... Went to 555.
I just had one question, because yes. I know you've been a few places. So that that backlog of let's call capital improvement projects is large.
Yeah.
So is that typical for a city of this size? Because, I mean, you know, I'm in private sector, not public sector, and I could never run a business with a backlog that big, you
right.
know? So I'm just curious if it's fairly typical for this size.
You know, I don't know how we compare on a per capita basis or kind of how we compare relative to our general fund size, but, you know, in Santa Cruz where I was before, it was 200, 300 million. Boulder, Colorado, before that, it was in that dollar range. It's a function of the cost of human capital rising above, you know, the standard cost of living. You know, it's really the pension and healthcare that drive those costs, which, you know, the ways you address that is to cut staff. But then, of course, we can't deliver services. So one of the strategies that's been used by virtually every city is you reduce your expenditures on capital. And you can only do that for so long, and then you're in a position where we are, where every capital expenditure is an emergency. And so, you know, if a roof collapses and we got to fix it, and then we're going into our reserves to do that. And so it's not strategic. So we have to find ways of continuing to balance the expectations of our community about what our service levels are for police, fire, public works, planning, et cetera, all those. And I think we run a pretty lean operation, all things considered. So there isn't a whole lot of places to cut there. That's why we need to look at investment strategies. And how do you do that in such a way that you don't overly burden the community? We just passed water and sewer rate increase, which will go into effect in July. So, you know, it's hard to afford to live here as it is. So those are the kind of things we have to think about. But it's very typical for cities to have a backlog in the millions, hundreds of millions. And so we're all struggling without a piecemeal together plan to start addressing those. And that's why boards like these are so helpful, is to say, okay, well, if you have limited dollars, these are the areas that you want to focus. Is it life and safety, or is it to really invest in your economy? You know, just those inputs are really important, because we can't take a bite at the whole apple at once. It's going to be kind of small incremental improvement. But it's a really good question. Thanks.
I think, you know, cities have to deal with, and I know a lot of cities, infrastructure is hidden and it ages, and people just don't realize that it's not going to be cheap to replace, especially nowadays. And everything is, you know, when you talk about private sector and the business, I don't think they some of the places don't have quite the funding operations. You know, the cities are never profit-making, so they everything that comes in gets poured into day-to-day stuff. And if people don't see an emergency, then they say, we don't want to pay for it. It's working, so let's not, you know, replace it now. But, okay. Any other comments from any of the board members?
So okay. we'll put together a little bit more information, look at kind of what our known needs are for capital. Is that probably a good approach, Rob? And then submit it back to the board members.
Yes, and then I would ask each one of you, if you come up with any specific issues, to email those to me without CCing the rest of the board members, and then we can put those in the staff report so we can have that discussion too. So like to get those probably, when is our next meeting? February 20th. So around the 10th of February, if we could if you do have any ideas, and I'll make sure I get something to John and Chris also, although we'll have a new member by that time. So okay. John and the new member.
Yep. Okay. Do you know offhand, I think, what the interviews are going to be like next week or something? Do we have some people for the position? Some
I believe we have four applicants for the one open position.
Great. All right. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
And you're released.
Okay, I'm going to walk over to the computer and put the director's report on. And,
okay.
Maybe so, just in case we need to look at something.
Okay. So the next item on the agenda will be the director's report, which Rob will have for us in just a moment.
Rob, we were just commenting that we like that size print. If you can do something about the print, it's your help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. We'll go through the director's report and first, with consolidated maintenance and moving into the wet season, it's mainly cold patching potholes temporarily until we make sure everything is dry, sign replacements, doing some vegetation trimming, working on some of the required plumbing in our parks areas, and there was a whole bunch of broken Trex boards on the harbor walk that we had to replace. We did a storm drain replacement down on the waterfront, took advantage of one of the construction projects down there. They pulled a lot of the overburden off, and we were able to get in there near the Harbor Hut, Tognazini's area, replaced a piece of storm drain in there. Great little project that we did. And then street trees. We have a prohibition on tree trimming coming up here at the end of this month. So we trimmed most of the downtown trees. We're going to have a contract out to do a few more in the next couple weeks. But the downtown trees, we got ready to install some downtown lighting in those trees that we're going to do. And based on survey that the city manager did, kind of unscientific survey, just talking to folks and meeting with the downtown business owners, we're going to go with the strings of cafe, or the individual bulb, those Edison-looking bulb lights, Those are a little hardier than the glowing orbs of light that we're going to hang from the trees. They were kind of a wicker ball with a clump of LED lamps in there. And so that'll start up probably in the next couple weeks with the electrical work, and then we'll have one of our local tree trimmers hang the lights. Stop me at any time that you might have any questions.
Rob, are those lights plugged into the local establishment that's by the lights?
We have an electrical system that has an 110 outlet at the base of the tree. We're tying into that and putting a piece of conduit, that flex conduit, that goes up into the lower tree canopy, and then plugging the lights in there. So they're paid for off the city's meter.
Great. So it costs the merchants nothing.
No.
So it's a permanent feature.
Yeah, it'll be
in lieu of street lights, basically.
We have street lights, low level street lighting in the downtown area.
Yeah, low
some
level.
Bollard lights.
Keyword low.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I mean, the intent is to provide lighting.
A little bit
the
of lighting,
year-round.
A little bit of ambiance.
Yeah.
If you light it, they will come.
What's the hours of operations that these will be lit?
We haven't determined that completely, but this time of year, probably somewhere around 5 o'clock and shutting off around midnight. And then in the summertime, you know, later in the evening, doesn't get dark until 7, 8 o'clock. So they'll be on an adjustable timer or photocell.
Okay. I have a couple concerns. We're technically a bird sanctuary city, and I'm also a dark skies person. And you mentioned about a lot of the street lights are, low light things. These cafe string lights are basically unshielded, so all of the light besides, decorating the tree also goes up. So I do have some concerns about adding all of this excessive lighting in the area. Are we going to line all of the trees? Is it going to be random trees? Or what's the situation for the increase of this light disbursement into the night skies?
There's 35 trees on the boulevard and between Napa and Monterey? Moro. And then Main Street between Moro Bay Boulevard and Harbor. All the trees on both sides of the street will have these lights in them. Mm. And it's being funded by a TBID recommended, some grant money, and council approved, about $16,000.
That's for the installation or installation and continued electric bills?
Installation only.
So we'll have that added power
electrical
usage.
Power
forever.
Usage. Yeah. About $800 a year.
It's LED, everything.
These are 2-watt LED lamps in each bulb socket, and there's 16 or so bulbs to string, and about 3 strings per tree.
Hmm. Okay. I have a question going back to the first page on streets, if I could. You brought up, and this is a concern of mine, Rob, and I didn't realize it till tonight driving over here, but I was coming across on Moro Avenue over here, and from Pacific almost all the way across, every stop bar has been wiped out, I think, by sealing of the roads over the last few months, and the stop bars haven't been replaced. And I don't know, that concerns me greatly, because all it takes is, down on the street where they put the reflectorized paint and the stuff.
Was that on Napa?
No, this was all on Moro as you're coming across. You still have the stop signs, but all it takes is a truck with a camper parked near the, intersection, and people don't see it, and I would have thought it would have been part of the contract of whoever did the doing the ceiling to take care of this at the same point.
It was, and I know Napa, we've only done the first layer, so I know all those stop bars are gone, but we'll check on Morrow also.
I wasn't on Napa. No, it was on Morrow because I came down Pacific, and then I came across on Morrow over here to surf, and about two-thirds of them were obliterated. Okay. I mean, it's funny. I walk town a lot over here, and I don't drive that often. And you don't notice it when you're walking, but you sure notice it when you're driving. Okay. You don't see the stop bars, especially, like I say, if something's blocking the stop sign. And that happens a lot in this town where there's on-street parking and people are parked near the intersections. Those kind of things just scare me a little, and I'd hate to see us get liable for
Think we're liable because the stop bar is not and legend are not the required component of a stop sign. Yeah. The mandatory component is the sign.
Right.
You can have you don't.
But the sign has
MUTCD doesn't
too,
require
so.
stop bar and legend.
Oh, okay. Well, to me, it looks like a creepy situation.
I know that when we did the paving on the boulevard, there were folks that have lived here their whole lives, and once we paved over the stop bar and legend, they probably ran every stop sign going downtown, even though the stop signs were completely unobstructed.
No, I gotcha.
just used to seeing that white legend.
That's
bar.
Usually what stops people, I think, personally. But in either case, that jumped out at me. And the only other question I had on the first page was, I'm not that familiar with Trex. I know what it is. Do you have to replace that stuff often? It's just a generalized question.
Typically not.
So it holds up real well.
It does hold up. The boards get broken near the commercial businesses when they get driven over.
It was almost not vandalism, but I mean it's where it's been damaged.
Damaged,
of,
yes.
Yeah.
Sand does get blown underneath those boards, and it's a pretty uncompressible once it gets blown in there, and they do get pushed up, and then the boards break. So we've had to pull out boards, get sand out of there.
Okay, but it's held up pretty well.
The material itself has been a good product. I actually like what we did on the second phase, stamped concrete, because
that's
we never get sand underneath it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut.
No, that's fine. That's what
I
should have mentioned that we can go through this page by page with questions or since this is kind of a different style than we've done before, it's to kind of keep me on track, too, with going through the director's report.
We can go ahead and do it page by page. It looks like Jan also has a question.
Yeah, on the wooden staircase at Surf Street, what's the status on that? I know it's gone, but the status for repair, is that anywhere on, or is that something that we were referring to earlier that should be on the...
On the things to do? That's... It cannot be replaced as a stair.
Yeah, it has to be a ramp.
More, it needs to be probably a switchback ramp system. It was beyond repair anymore. We'd done what we could do to repair that. There was no solid wood to screw things back into, plus the where the timbers went into the ground, they were rotting. Our insurance provider directed us or recommended that we remove those stairs immediately. So we did that. I revised my estimate for replacement of those stairs. I did a quick estimate for the budget last year. Was probably a bit light on what it would cost. We're probably looking somewhere with the retaining walls and the concrete walkway somewhere between $500,000 and $800,000 to replace those, and it's currently not budgeted for. We need to refine that estimate. That was not based on a design. That was based on my engineering grid paper and pencil design, no topo. the first phase should be a preliminary design so we can refine that cost a little bit more. But I'm assuming that it's going to be somewhere in the range of several hundred thousand dollars to put in a switchback ramp. Ends up being about 300 feet long by the time you get from this level down to the Front Street level.
So it probably wouldn't be completed next year, but does it still need to be? Is that one of the things?
It would need to be budgeted for.
But we need to have put it on our goals that Scott wants.
Yes, and we need to have the funds available to do that.
Christian, do you have any questions at this time?
Aren't there new buildings down at the bottom right in that area going in? I can't remember how that it's not right there.
It's one parcel removed from
where
the Surf Street.
New buildings are
The hotel buildings, and those were approved.
I just wasn't sure if there was going to be a conflict as a result.
No.
Oh, okay. So,
those stairs were in the right of way. We have 80 feet of right of way that go down that 80 feet in width.
So Surf Street continues.
Continues down, and
gotcha.
the map that created Surf Street. Surf Street ends somewhere out in the bay.
Okay.
Stu, you had something else?
Rob, on the high visibility street signs on Hill and Bayview and Minion Avenue, what's the difference between those and what we have now? I assume they're stop signs.
All of our street signs need to be higher visibility and retroreflective. It's a Federal Highways Administration requirement that we maintain our retroreflectivity so you can see them at night. And we're going through the process of changing out signs. So it's street name signs, stop signs, any regulatory signs need to be high visibility signs so that they have the reflective qualities to them when your headlights hit them at night, you can actually see and read that sign.
Okay, and you were talking about they've ground off the little bar where you stop at, for example, on Ironwood. There's a bar that across the street that you stop at, and it's gone. They've ground it off. I would imagine the paving company did, and it's been off for a month or two. Are we going to replace that?
They did the first phase of this pavement work, then it started to rain a little bit every week. We had a holiday in there. I think now they're proposing to come back to town to complete it. Really, all they need is 4 days more to complete our project for this year. So they need 4 dry days to do that work.
We don't want that, but do we have a list of what they're going to replace, or do we just walk around and just assume they're going to take care of all those?
All the ones that they removed, we have identified those. Those were part of the contract. They'll be putting those back, and then we'll look at Morrow Avenue because we do quantities after the project is done. So if they didn't do it last year, we didn't pay for it. So we'll just
Was just worrying the timing, you know, between the time they took it off.
Typically, they should have done it.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought personally. Yeah. Thanks.
Usually about 3 weeks after the slurry work is done, you have to have a cure time, and then they can do the permanent striping.
Okay, since we're sort of in that streets and street signs area, a few months ago, whenever it was the last meeting I was here at, I'd pointed out that on San Jacinto, there was a stop sign that appeared to be blocked by limbs. I think it was at the Greenwood intersection because it was just after schools, you know, were starting. All the intersections were repainted for schools, and it's a not a stop sign, but it's a crosswalk. School crosswalk sign. I'd asked about the tree because you don't see the sign until you're just on top of it because of the tree that had branches sticking out. And I was curious whether it was the property owners or whether it was in our right of way. Do you recall me asking about that?
I don't, but I probably have an answer for you. So if it's caused by a tree that's on within the right-of-way, we will trim that. If it's the site distance is impaired by a tree on private property, we communicate with the property owner and have them do it. If they don't do it with a certain amount of time, we'll go ahead and do it and send them a bill to.
What is the site distance that would be required for, you know, that kind of a sign?
I don't remember off the top of my head what the MUTCD says, but generally about 200 feet ahead is what you want to be able to see that.
Okay, because it's definitely not visible at that distance.
And that's at San Jacinto and
Greenwood.
Greenwood.
Yeah, it's the major crosswalk going to school. I think it's San Jacinto. Yeah, San Jacinto. Yeah. Okay, continue to the next page, please.
Rob, you've got a note here about GFCI breakers. You're doing all the plug-ins on Main Street, is that right?
Yes, we're doing some maintenance and replacing those plugs that are at each tree well.
Okay, so they're kind of rotten right now, I would imagine, or they're open circuit or they're this or that.
I think they were installed in the mid-90s, and it's just time to replace them. Metal objects that are outside Morro Bay don't last forever.
Okay, I understand it. GFCI, I know what GFI are. What's the C mean?
Circuit.
Okay, cool. All right.
And we'll work on those abbreviations. We thought we scrubbed them, but we missed.
I got notes all through here about abbreviations, but the other question I've had, are we down the parks yet?
No, we're not.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is all in the consolidated maintenance realm. And I forgot to introduce, we have Matt Bishop, who's acting consolidated maintenance superintendent right now. Well, Mike is out for a while, so we'll have Matt coming to these meetings. And he can hop up to the microphone anytime that I'm struggling to answer a question.
Okay, I've got a question, Matt. Delmar Park is full of gopher holes, and I watch kids out there playing. And Rob, do we have a liability if a kid happens to stumble into one of those gopher holes and breaks his leg, or what are we doing there? And is there something we could do about the gophers?
Good evening, Chair Deschler, Vice Chair Chevley. And the board. I'm Matt Bishop. One thing we've been doing is that's always been a problem with trying to eradicate these gophers, of course. But we have been doing our best to. We use a smoke, little smoke gopher smoke bombs that you light them and stick them in the hole, bury the hole. They've been pretty effective. They are, you know, at times, you know, giving us a multitude of problems around Delmar Park especially, but we're doing the best we can. We're just hard to keep up with those little guys.
There's roughly 60 gophers out there that I can count now, and we're going to get in trouble with that sooner or later because we've got piles of dirt and we've got open holes in the ground that the gophers are leaving.
They are,
and
yeah.
That's going to cause an issue with sooner or later. So, you know, probably it'd be something that we should.
So we currently leave a pile of dirt out there, just native dirt, native soil, out at the Del Mar and other parks. And what our guys do is they go out and they do the little smoke bombs, stick them down there, bury the holes. And as time goes on, you still see these holes exposed. So we'll go out and we'll grab some of that dirt and we'll just keep on maintaining. But like I said, it's just an ongoing battle. Yeah, so
we'll never eliminate the gophers, especially given where the Delmar Park is up against the undeveloped area. Maybe we need to pass an ordinance that prohibits gophers from coming into the city limits. I don't really have a way to eliminate gophers, nor if I did have one, we probably wouldn't want to use it. I was in the Marine Corps, so we did have ways to get rid of things during those days. But the cure is probably worse than the problem.
Okay.
Where I came from, we sometimes would use a vibrator on them. Go on top of the hole with a vibrator and shake it hard.
Oh, good.
And it collapses the tunnel underneath it. And it kind of discourages them from doing that. So, but if you look at Del Mar, there's more holes every day. And Bob, the maintenance man out there, chases those critters around. And, of course, he's got a limited number of hours he can spend chasing gophers around. But we're going to get in trouble with that sooner or later. So,
all right. Thank you, Stu. Rob, continue.
Thank you. Let's see, where would we gotten to? Street trees, finished that. Now on to our transit process of completing the short-term transit plan. We have a couple of vehicle purchases that we're going to make, and we're in the midst of our triannual or every 3 year audit on transit, and Janine's here to answer any questions that you might have on transit.
All right, do we have any questions on transit? Members? No. Stu, it sounds like you have one.
This business in transit of moving the people from the Rock back to Main Street or wherever in the summertime. I know I've talked to the fellows that drive the buses and so on, and they say that traffic gets so bad out there that sometimes it takes 45 minutes to get from the Rock back to a Main Street. And perhaps we could look at, I've walked that area down there, perhaps we could look at perhaps going alongside the Corporation Yard or the shed down there, going back and tying in behind the power station, and that goes right up and ties into Main Street. And you would think, use that as an avenue to run the buses and so on in the summertime when it's really, really busy out there and traffic is stacked up, to move the buses off of there and move people around, and perhaps that would cut down on the traffic at the Rock too, because people from the hotels and motels around town could jump in the buses and go down there and see the sea lions and whatever they want to see.
I think that idea has been floated with the redevelopment of the power plant property, but we don't own any of that property back there, nor do we have any rights of way to use that. When Dynergy owned it, they were willing to sell pieces of it to us for several million dollars. One idea was to expand Lila Kaiser Park back. In fact, we don't own Lila Kaiser Park. We lease the property for Lila Kaiser Park. And there will have to be a bridge that would be built across Morrow Creek to get from basically the Tascadero Road area to the other side of the creek and up Main Street there. So it's something that has been looked at, but we're a ways away from doing that. It will take redevelopment of the power plant to have that happen.
Sounds like we just have way too many tourists here. We're way too successful. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a good thing. I mean, they come here and spend their money.
Well, if it takes them that much longer to get from the Rock back to their hotel, then...
Well,
maybe
when they're dammed up, they aren't out spending money, so we need to get
them. Well, I would think it'd be a problem because isn't the trolley picking people up between the Rock and Main Street along the Embarcadero?
I'm not sure how many stops are there. Janine can probably help us with that. One of the problems is the intersection
you'd be
of Beach.
Short-circuiting the whole Embarcadero is what I'm hearing.
Well, the trolley that goes out to the Rock is the one that just travels along the Embarcadero, so it's going from the Rock along the waterfront to Tidelands Park and back. So it doesn't ever travel up to Main Street. It will pop up to Market on the top of the Centennial Stairway to make connections to the north and the downtown routes that then do have other stops in those various routes in Morro Bay Boulevard area and along Main Street north and south.
So it needs to stay on the Embarcadero. That's its route, correct?
Correct, unless we look at some complete redesign of routing of the trolleys. And you would still have that issue with whatever you do with that route, because from the Rock to Beach Street, there's no other way to divert off of it and get up towards Main Street.
Yeah, unless you have a road just for the trolley, a single lane road or something. Maybe. Perhaps there's some solution there, some place to move them and stop them from spending 20 minutes or half an hour or an hour coming back from the Rock with a tourist. So it's something to think about.
Thank you. Jan?
Yeah, Janine, I noticed, I think this is a positive thing, if I remember right, that the transit system's fare box ratio is 11.5. That's an increase of, seems like when I was first on this board, it was just barely at 10%. So is this just the bus around town, or does this include
This is the whole transit system. So it includes the yearly deviated fixed route as well as the seasonal trolley service. Mm-hmm. And the fare box ratio is actually down a little bit from the prior fiscal year, but we're still well above that 10% requirement from the state. And part of what the short-range transit plan is designed to do, part of what the triennial performance audit does, is looking at what is your past performance, what are some things that you can do that maybe you're not doing right now, changes to the system that you could make or hours of service that will help you to lower your operating costs or increase the number of riders and fare revenue, which all goes into that calculation and helps to improve that. So not too concerned that we had a little dip. When we were looking through the fiscal audit and as we were looking in the short-range transit plan, we were identifying what were some of the reasons why we had a decrease from the one fiscal year to the other fiscal year. We are such a small system that if we have one rider on our bus system that rides multiple times a week, several times in a day, having them move out of the area or have an extended sickness or get a car can mean a percentage point in the fare box ratio.
All right. But I think just with what, Scott had to say, so many of these things are kind of hand in glove. So, I mean, the ratios are what they are now, but if we move towards paid parking, we also may see, higher transit, on the trolley because people are coming from non-paid zones back down to the shopping center, and some things like that. So I just think as a lot of that stuff's put together, when we talk about tourism and then we talk about, we didn't have the adopt a park, and so people were coming down here and an area looked dirty, or we didn't have a trolley system, so it was harder to get around. So I think definitely, like you're saying, we're so small right now that a couple of users could affect that. But, as the city changes its plan, even with paid parking and other approaches, all we can do is estimate that right now and what some of those usages will be.
Correct.
And then we're stuck in a situation where we want tourism, and if we find ourselves not offering, a small bus route, in our shopping zones and stuff, then we kind of put ourselves out of the market a bit.
And with the trolley service, with the visitors who come here year to year, things weather related
affects trolley ridership. If it's a little cold, if it's a little foggy, they don't ride for some reason. If it's sunny, we have more people coming out to the Embarcadero, to the waterfront, to the beaches, so that increases. We had, with the closure of Highway 1, that had a big impact to trolley service because we were not getting as many of those visitors coming to the area, and then therefore being in the campgrounds, our campground totals were down. So now that Highway 1's reopened, we're hoping to see for this upcoming season that some of that will have rebounded. So there's a lot of different pieces as to, there's a little decrease of ridership here, a little bit there, and they all kind of add up, and they all change from year to year. So part of what these triennial performance audits and these five-year short-range transit plans try to do is look at that prior history, what has happened. If you've had some decreases, why has that occurred? Are they because of things that are out of the city's control, or are there things that we could maybe improve or make tweaks to the services that would help to increase ridership for the future? So we're above the 10%, so that's a good thing. And I think we had only decreased not quite a percent from last the prior fiscal year. So not too much of a concern at this point. And the short-range transit plan has a few things that the city will be looking at implementing, expanding a little bit of hours on the, like starting, one of the recommendations is to start the trolley service an hour earlier than it normally does so that we could get a few more passengers riding it in the morning time. Right now it starts at 11. The recommendation is to start at 10. And so there, when looking at that, they did kind of a cost benefit. So how much additional expenditures might that be, but how much potential revenue you might gain from that? And would that help the fare box ratio and be something to recommend to do?
You know, from the visitor center point of view, one thing that's difficult with the trolleys is that they're not on a set time, because one takes 40 minutes and one takes 45 minutes or something, depending on how many people are on it. But the two of them go up to City Park, right?
Correct.
But so I can always just tell people to just go up there and wait, because I don't know, because there's not a specific time.
And one of the things we did talk about and look at in the short-range transit plan is that very thing. The trolley, it's really hard to try to have time points for each stop because of the very nature of traffic. If you know, it's almost like we would always be off schedule if we did time points. But what we did talk about was maybe including time points for certain stops. So like at City Park, that's a point where there's some transferring between the regional system, the local system, and the trolley service in two of those routes. Having a time point at the campgrounds, because those are major generators for where people are coming from and then going back to, and maybe having another time point up at the Market Street stop where all the trolleys connect. So coming up off of the waterfront and then distributing back out to hotels and the campgrounds. So at least that would give riders an idea of, okay, if I'm leaving the campground or coming home to the campground, this is the time. And then acknowledging that sometimes that might not occur based on the conditions of what's happening out there in the street and traffic.
You know, when you look at the big picture there, we've got tourists that come here that stay in the campgrounds and stay in the motels and hotels, and it would be good for us economically because they'll spend more money here if we somehow structure that so that they can see, well, let's see, it comes here at 9:42 or it comes here at 11:42 or whatever, and get some sort of structure put together so we know kind of when the trolley is going to come or when the bus is going to come and so on and pick us up and take us to the Rock or take us wherever. I know I've talked to the ranger at the North Morrill, and that's, I forget the name of that up there, but I've talked to the ranger up there, and he said, it's a good idea. How would you like a bus up here that comes at a regular time? And he said, that'd be a good idea. And he said, we do have a regular time, kind of, but it does fluctuate. And people that want to come into town to spend money at our restaurants and our clubs and do things like that, we need to make it, I think, a little more convenient for them to get on the bus and get in here.
Yeah.
And Stuart, spend money.
The city bus does come on regular times. Yeah. But it's a trolley that just is hit and miss.
It's more difficult to get that kind of timing down. One of the other things that we kind of talked about in the short-range transit plan when we were discussing this particular thing is whether to look at whether we could get some sort of GPS system and a bus tracking kind of app that somebody could, that we could have information at the stops, we could have information on the brochures, and that way somebody, if they had the app, they could pick that route and see where is the trolley at that particular point in relation to the location and stop where they're at. And that's something that was talked about as maybe an idea to look into and see, is that something that might help alleviate this particular issue in addition to having some specific time points for a few of those locations. And that may be something that would alleviate that issue.
Any other questions on transit for Janine? Thank you very much.
Well, let's move on to the world of utilities. Joe and Damaris are here to help us through this one. Should we need their assistance on the water world, perform some call-out work, and general maintenance. One of the out of ordinary things was we have GSI Water doing some hydrogeological work, and we assisted them in installing sensors or pressure transducers in the wells so they can gather pressure information on those wells as they develop their detailed model on the groundwater basin. Did a lot of sampling and submitted our regulatory sampling and then our regular reporting for water. We have the drought monitor showing that California is still in drought. It'll be interesting to see the change in it after our little bit of rain that we received. I wouldn't expect it to change too awfully much, but we'll see fewer of those angry colors, I'm sure, and some lighter colors on the map. Although I don't know if this particular segment of the government is continuing to operate. I didn't notice if they published a new drought monitor report this week. Probably depends on their funding level, but there was some reductions in water conservation over 2013, and probably as a result of we got rain last year, so we don't need to conserve as much, I would guess, is typical of what happens. Plus, there's water conservation fatigue. You see that happening. People conserve less and less over time.
So I've noticed that, like driving here this evening, I cross Choro Creek. The bridge is there, and I always, every day, I'll look down, and I've seen trickles go through, but it's never been a full flow, and most of the time it's dry, even after rains, which means the hills out there are soaking all this rain up, and none of it's runoff yet. So I think we're still a long ways from
getting our basins recharged out there in the hills.
It's typically fairly late in the year before we get at Morrow Creek. Get enough flow in there to break through the bar to have it be flowing constantly. Mm-hmm. So later on in the spring and a normal year, we'll see that happening. But it does take quite a bit of water in the watershed to make that happen.
Rob, Morrow Creek has got quite a bit of brush in it right there where the bridge is at Main Street, just east of that. And do we go in and clean that out for them? Or that trailer park is right there. And I know one of the residents there complained that the water was rising.
Yes, there is brush in the creek. The city has, except at the crossings, has no right-of-way to get in there to clean the creeks, nor do we have a permit with California Fish and Wildlife to get in there and trim. It's private property owners can do that work. They can get a permit through Fish and Wildlife and except at crossings where the city has responsibility to keep the bridge and culverts clear. We don't go on to private property and do that work.
So if something floods, then it's not our responsibility. It's the property owner that didn't cut the brush.
Or it is a natural occurrence, and we hold whoever caused that natural occurrence responsible.
So, Rob, I have another, just a definition here. It's back on page 7 about the unregulated contaminated monitoring rule. So is it the monitoring that's unregulated? Are the contaminants unregulated? If it's an unregulated rule, why do you have to monitor it? What does that mean?
These are contaminants in the water system, the bigger water system, so the streams, creeks, groundwater, that may or may not be there, that EPA is gathering data on to determine whether they need to be regulated. Did I get that pretty close? Yeah. Yes, the contaminants are unregulated. We don't know if they cause a problem. So we get a new list of them every year. This is the fourth year we've done this.
I have another question. Install new water service at 110 Orchard Way. Aren't all lots in the city set up with water available, and they just put a meter in them, and we're off and running? Or what?
Not every lot has a water service going to it. Some need new water services installed. And even the ones with existing water services, if you're building a new house that requires fire sprinklers, typically the existing water service is a 3/4 inch service there that will likely need to be upgraded to a 1 inch service. So we have to go out there and upgrade that service.
All right. You may continue.
Moving on to collections. A lot of maintenance activities. We got rid of our old Vactor truck, sold that. Continue to develop our CityWorks, which is our asset management work order program. Let's see, anything else of note? We're continuing to send our staff for training and encourage them to get their advance in the operator certification program so that they are better operators. Air Pollution Control District, APCD, that's what that stands for, came out to do their inspection and didn't have any issues with any of our fixed or mobile equipment. And any questions on wastewater collections? Moving on to the treatment plant. Still a lot of maintenance that takes place out there. Both on the kind of the water side and the electrical side. Did some work on instrumentation with our chlorine analyzers. Training, we did trench safety training, confined space training, and Haz Rescue cooperated with the fire department on that, and then did our required report submittals.
I noticed, you know, on the flows for the months of October, November, December, you have all three there. That December was had a significant jump there. And then I also looked at the rainfall, so it didn't look like it was I&I induced, because November had a lot more rain, than twice as much rain as December. Is that always a jump in December? That seems like it would be a low month.
Except that more people come to town during the holidays.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right. It was extremely high visitor time over December, you know, and we saw that on the water side too. We definitely continuously had to call in for additional water from the state. You know, our tanks were dropping extremely quick. So this was one of our busier, actually, holiday seasons from the past few years. We actually used a lot of water, and as such, a lot more water wound up down at the wastewater treatment plant.
All right. Any other comments on treatment? Okay.
Engineering capital projects, no change on 41 in Maine. Still in the Caltrans review of the archaeological work that we've done out there. So pavement management, it seems to have, we've gotten a few drops of water every week, so... unfortunately, can't schedule that, but as soon as we get them back on the schedule, we'll make sure that everybody knows. I'm looking forward to completing that work. Nutmeg tank, no change in the status. It was one of the capital project items in our one water plan, and one of the sooner rather than later projects that we'll need to complete. Choro Creek stream gauges, through the One Water Plan, Council gave us direction to begin the process of discontinuing Choro as a water supply. King's Fairview, we have a little slope issue right at that intersection. We received several bids well in excess of the engineer's estimate.
Could you explain that a little more, what the problem is that needs to be repaired?
There is the street sits above a property there at the corner of King's and Fairview. There's been a little bit of erosion plus some duft from the tree that has piled up against the downhill property owner's fence. It's due to a claim that was filed with the city. And as opposed to litigating the claim, this is the lower cost option to fix the slope. So it involves construction of a small retaining wall, a guardrail, and we've already removed the tree that was the offending tree that was causing some of the problem there. So the bids were about double what we thought they would be. We didn't use the informal bid process. We just called three of the contractors on our public works list. We'll wait until, and we bid it over the holidays, so there wasn't a lot of interest in doing the work. So we're going to rebid this later this month when contractors are finished with their little vacation time over the holidays and hopefully get a little bit wider response on that. North Point, we're looking at installing a small retaining wall next to the parking lot in that slope area. Yeah. Two purposes, to cut down on the erosion, the dirt that ends up in the parking lot, and then also hopefully dissuade people from driving up that slope and accessing the top of the bluff there with their vehicle. And then also we have a little bit of a lighting project there for some, the North Point Assessment District asks for some lighting there, at least during the early evening hours to dissuade some activities that happen there in the parking lot.
I'm sorry. I was going to go back up to something you discussed.
So it's basically one street light that we'll install there.
A quick question I had was on the Chorl stream gauges, and that is, by discontinuing use as a water supply, are you abandoning your any rights you may have? To
yes, we would not.
Okay, so it's off the table from
we
here.
Would, we haven't made beneficial use of Choro quite a while, at least 5 years, somewhere around 5 years. We would have a difficult time. We don't have an actual right to Choro. We have a permit.
Right.
We need to show beneficial use of that water. And we have a difficult time getting that water into the system because we need a water treatment plant out there to treat for nitrates because we have not a dedicated pumping line. We have customers on that line.
But it was also predicated on the flow rate in Choro Creek.
Yes.
And did you ever get up to those levels?
We did. We do exceed the 1.4 CFS, but it's typically when we don't need the water.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So it's during the wintertime when it's raining.
You answered my question.
Okay.
Thanks, Rob.
Cloisters landscape improvements. Cloisters Park and open space area has been around since the late 90s. Some of the landscaping has gotten a bit long in the tooth and a little bit woody. We had an RFP out for a landscape professional to assess the landscaping out there and provide concept ideas for Reese landscaping, and then that'll move on to projects, and that's funded by the assessment district. Several development review projects in various stages of development. Mr. Irwin's favorite project, the Morrow Mist 23-lot subdivision. Mm-hmm. I think I have their frontage improvements are complete. I think there's still a slight gap in the sidewalk that they need to finish up for that to be complete. And then we'll have them move that chain link fence back behind the sidewalk.
What about Sonic Restaurant? Do they own that property? Is it reasonable to expect that they're going to be there someday soon?
I believe they do own the property. Someday soon.
I've been here 11 years, and I've been hearing that Sonic is going in there.
Yes, they're. They have other projects that they also work on. Mm-hmm. Other Sonics, and they're prioritizing their work. I think we have a recent resubmittal from them, but it's slow in them responding to plan check comments. Mm-hmm.
But they own the property, so.
I believe they do own the property. A few projects down on the waterfront that are going on, as folks have probably seen. The hotel project on Atascadero Road at Highway 1 next to the high school went for concept plan review at Planning Commission I think generally supportive of the project with some changes to it.
That was last night, right?
Last night at Planning Commission, yeah. So
I noticed, the two of the issues were that it was like 5 feet over the height limit and, two less parking spaces than required. Do you know whether that was resolved or?
Fortunately or unfortunately, that is in a PD zone, so they can ask for exceptions from the design standards given public benefit. So I think they're proposing EV charging stations there at their hotel in excess what would be typically required, some improvements to the – they're going to be installing a Class 1 bike path. And I think they have to I think they'll still be over height, but they're going to reduce at least a portion of the hotel height where the primary view corridor is, but not the all of the building height. So it will be over height, but that's allowed in a PD zone. One of the problems with height is they're in a flood zone, so they have to build up a little bit to they're doing a combination of fill and floodproofing to deal with their floodplain regulations there.
Okay. I know it's not under our jurisdiction, but just a question you may have the answer to. I noticed that PG&E is replacing some of the towers, going out from the plant. Do you know how long that – I'm guessing that they're going to be transferring the wires to the new towers that they've built once they get the whole system constructed. Are they going to be eliminating any of the old towers?
Yeah, they're pulling out those lattice towers one at a time and replacing them with the monopole towers for structural reasons. So – I don't think I think they'll all eventually be monopoles, but that's a long-term project. I think it's, somewhere around a year to get all those changed out. But they eventually will, those lattice towers will be replaced with monopole towers. And then they also have a project on the substation site itself to modernize that and to move much of the equipment in a building because of they've had some outages here due to salty fog on the high voltage, and it's caused some and that substation does not only serves Morro Bay, but serves much of San Luis Obispo County and northern Santa Barbara County. So it's a major facility here. So that will, as we know, that will be around for a long time.
All right. Thank you for that information.
On the WRF project, a major step that Mr. Shively, I think, has been experienced the presentation on that I included in the packet is the collection. The conveyance system. So conveying the wastewater to the new site from the existing site, and then conveying clean water and not so clean water back down the hill. So we'll have basically four pipelines, two force mains. Basically, two force mains we have to install to deal with velocity issues in the pipe. So we have high flows and high velocities that don't occur very often but need to be accommodated, and then we have low flows and low velocities where you don't want a big pipe there so that you maintain those velocities. So that's why two force mains. We'll have a reclaimed water line that will go to the injection system, and then a brine wet weather line that will go to our ocean outfall. We'll also put some fiber conduit in that trench so that we have communications capabilities. The recommended alignment for that is starting at the near the treatment plant, basically at the courtyard, going up Atascadero Road to the southbound on-ramp to Highway 1, up the ramp till we cross over Moro Creek, then back down onto the bike path out to Quintana, Quintana all the way out to South Bay Boulevard, under using the undercrossing to get up to the Teresa Drive area, and then Teresa Drive, or not Teresa Drive, the extension of South Bay Boulevard.
Yeah, you're going under. You're going under at South Bay Boulevard.
Yes. One of the original concepts was to to bore under just kind of north west of that area, and then come down Teresa Drive. There are just so many utilities in Teresa Drive with water, sewer, state water, whale rock. It's just chock full, storm drain, high pressure gas. There's just not enough room to build those facilities. It will be, can't make any bones about this. The concern is impact of businesses along Quintana Drive. Can't say that it won't be impactful, but the plan is not to completely close the road to do that work, to leave one lane open. Luckily, we have a couple of, or at least one additional access point. Kennedy Way does come down there that allows access to the two shopping centers. The trench that will go along Quintana and craft across several driveways will be plated at those crossings so people can access those driveways. But no bones about it. It is a major construction project and will be impactful.
Real quick, you talked about competitively bid the FPVC or the HDPE. Are you using both product in different locations, like one for the horizontal drilling and the other for...
No, it's either or.
It's an either or. I didn't know they could do HDP and do the... So you can jack that through, so to speak.
Well, it'll be probably directional drilling.
But you can't do HDP with the corrugation and all. Oh, okay.
A few of those places, it will be in a carrier pipe.
Okay. So you're going to put a sleeve?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Not direct burial.
Yeah, right.
Rob, I see no mention in the documentation here about using solar or wind turbines or something to help us with power to generate, to run the pumps and so on. You're going to have quite a bit of pumps and quite a bit of load there. Have you looked at that?
That's part of the concept for the treatment plant site is there's an area reserved on the site for a solar farm. We could probably not at those lift stations. There's not enough roof area at those lift stations to provide really any viable power. We might be able to power the communications that is needed, but the pumping systems, not enough. Solar access there to provide those.
They're three-phase pumps.
Yes.
There, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why one of the concepts that we looked at is splitting the pump station and using some of the existing collection system to deliver that wastewater to the treatment plant rather than having everything drained to the existing low point at the plant and then pumped all back up. We can sewer a substantial portion of the south end of town through that second pump station and through existing lift station 3.
Right.
So it's the lowest cost option.
I've been in contact with a couple of the solar companies and who are interested in bidding on providing power for it and for the pumps and so on. And are we interested in looking at that? Or?
It's not part of this current phase of the project. We would likely do it as a purchase power agreement where the city would have very little out-of-pocket costs, and we would buy power from whoever provides that solar. So we wouldn't own the system. We would I'd likely have somebody install it, and we would purchase the power from them. There's advantages to that. We as a city can't take advantage of any of the tax incentives for installing solar through a purchase power agreement. The installer can take advantage of those tax credits and provide us with a lower cost. But it'll likely occur after the facility is built, the solar component.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Was this presented to council in December or in January?
It'll be presented next week.
Oh, they haven't got it
yet. They haven't received it yet. This is the same presentation that went to WRFCAC. At the next council meeting, you'll see this presentation along with an overall update on the project in general. So.
Thank
that
you.
Concludes the director's report.
Any last-minute questions for Rob on the director's report? Okay, seeing none.
Jan. A question that's sort of just an out there in the question. That's somewhere in my brain. Question.
Okay.
Okay. Now that the Land Conservancy has purchased that land between Toro Creek and Cayucas, does this? I'm assuming that means that the bike lane that they want to put in for between Morro Bay and Cayucas will be easier to do now because the property is owned by a conservancy.
I'm not sure if the purchase is actually complete. I think they got $1 million from Coastal Conservancy, but that wasn't the total amount they needed. I think they're still in the fundraising stage.
Oh, I read it. I understood that they'd already bought that purchase and they needed more money to buy more land, but that was purchased already?
It could be, but that was one of the stumbling blocks on the bike path was property ownership because Chevron wasn't willing to negotiate an easement for the bike path through there until they sold the they wanted the new property owner to deal with that.
So that if that is purchased, then does that necessarily put is the bike path in the slow cog list of things that when you get the money, you know, if you have a shovel ready project and the money comes available, I mean, does that put us farther up the list to have it done? Or is
the county did apply for alternative transportation project money through the state. No San Luis Obispo projects were awarded any money for that. That was to fund a portion of the construction of it. So they're still out seeking grant money to fully fund the construction of the project. It's difficult competing with large urban areas for alternative transportation projects. It's difficult for us to show the cost-benefit ratio.
That was a question brought to me by a visitor at the visitor center.
Still a county, a very important county project. They're still pushing forward with that project, and I'm sure that it will be built sometime. Hopefully, so I can use it on my bike.
Lifetime.
One thing that is moving forward is the Caltrans project to replace the northbound bridge crossing Toro Creek to add width to that that bridge, because that's an interesting experience to ride across that bridge on your bike.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That was it.
Okay. Any additional questions for Rob? Okay. Next item is potential future agenda items. Update for Highway 41 in Maine and water supply. You have listed here is that just upcoming in some future meetings, or do you think that that will be on the February meeting?
Probably not at the February meeting.
Okay.
The we're waiting on Caltrans' response on the 41 in Maine, so and FHWA, who's not currently working right now. So
I would assume the next meeting is going to be the goals we spoke about.
Yes, that'll be one the major item on there.
Okay.
The water supply allocation will probably be later in the spring. It's what we'll do, you know, every year to allocate
Number of houses.
Number of units,
yeah,
yes.
Units, yeah. Okay. Before we move to adjournment, I wanted to let you know I will not be at next month's February meeting. So, Jan, you get to chair. I tricked you there, huh? With that, we will...
And just a reminder to the board,
yes.
To email me your ideas for goals,
yes.
And
for
the so that we get them into that staff report, should you have any prior to that meeting.
Okay. And with that, we will adjourn to the February 20th, 2019 meeting. Thank you, everyone, for showing up, especially all the staff that's been patiently sitting out there.